Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Fire the tire.
Good morning, good afternoon. Hello to all of our listeners on the Publicity Genie show today or tonight or wherever it is that you are. Hopefully you're having a fantastic day. I have got an amazing lineup this morning. I'm bringing to you three incredible business women who I've got to know either through Facebook or personally, who are doing some pretty amazing things in their space. So this is the first time we've done this on the Publicity Genie show. So let's fingers crossed and it's all going to go well. Firstly, I want to introduce you to Pat. She is a pioneering leader in the area of authentic leadership, engagement and creativity. I've heard her described as a modern day Renaissance woman, and I think that's why she appeals to me. She just has this business acumen and creativity that reflects the wonderful things that she's doing. Pat is like all about helping people to transform their lives, and she came to my attention because not only is she a storyteller, but she's got this amazing program on how you can shamelessly self-promote yourself, and as a publicity genie, you can see that would appeal to me. Pat, welcome on the show.
Thank you so much. Lovely to be here.
Yes. Look, we're going to have a great time this morning. Now I'm going to introduce you to my next guest, Kelly Kingston. She is the founder and co-director of One Purse, One Planet. And like when you hear what it is that this organisation does, it's going to give you a real buzz. It was created to offer affordable, self-sustainable communities that can be duplicated worldwide, because Kelly feels that everyone on the face of the planet has the right to feel safe, be loved, have shelter, clothes, a bed to sleep, food, clean water and wellness, you know, just the necessities of life. Now, Kelly's been doing this for not a long time, but long enough that when you're in her space, you just know this is what she's passionate about. Kelly, thank you so much for coming on the show today. She's run away. Kelly. Well, let's go to Judy. Judy Gregory owns, Dr. Judy Gregory, she owns the Northside Meetings with the Letter Lounge Cafe and Gifts, which is based in Brisbane, Australia. And it's a really cool concept of meeting venue, training venue and cafe. And it only opened up almost a year ago in 2016. She's also the Principal Information Design Centre, which is a consultancy offering plain English writing. Oh my gosh, don't we need that? Editing training and research and facilitation to government and community-based organisations. She's a former academic who taught communication and research methods at QUT, and she confesses that self-promotion doesn't come easily to her, so that's why she likes to be out of the limelight. Today we're going to talk about how she can move further into the limelight. Judy, welcome. How are you?
Thank you, Annette. I'm very pleased to be here and I'm well. Thank you.
That's excellent to hear. Now, we've lost Kelly, so we'll try and get her back. So I've asked her to log back in. So for now, Judy and Pat, we're going to start with the two of you. Judy, I want to have a chat with you about your venue that you've created last year, the Letter Lounge. And I can see why you called it the Letter Lounge. What motivated you to start a space like this?
I do a lot of training in venues around Queensland, and it struck me that Brisbane really lacks a space that small business people can use to run small training sessions and to run private meetings, particularly people who work from home. They often don't have a space to meet with their clients. And so I decided to start it. I used to have this dream of running a bookshop cafe, and I decided to make it a meeting room cafe instead. And so I tried to put those different ideas together and ended up with this space.
Well, That's pretty cool. And what have you found to be the most challenging thing about making people aware that this venue's available?
I'm finding being known is enormously difficult. In my other work as a consultant, I need to be known by very small numbers of people who give me quite big projects. And in this industry, I need to be known by as many people as possible because our transactions are small. And making that shift to needing to publicise this place to as many people as possible is one that I'm finding really challenging. Being known is so hard.
All right. Well, so maybe today, well, as we talk between the three of us, we might also come up with some suggestions to help you and other people who find themselves in the same situation. So, now, Pat, tell me a little bit more about what you're doing at the moment.
Well, I'm actually returning to work after being off sick for 2 years, but since 2001, I've been operating under the guise of the world's first geologist and delivering a range of programs to support people through moving through grief and loss and to transcend their current circumstances and go on to be fully self-expressed. When it began, I was in a very unresourced place. I'd had a series of losses, and my partner of 20 years left with another woman. And starting off again under this umbrella, which I thought was, you know, pretty out there at the time, I knew I had to do things differently. And the two things that I did was, number one, I committed that I would be published every month, and I had the courage to find myself a mentor whose office I would hardly dare to enter. And so my mentor ended up being the MD of Saatchi & Saatchi in Auckland.
Nice. I bet he had some wonderful insights to share with you.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Now, Kelly, have we got you back online?
Can you hear me?
I can, Kelly. Fantastic. You're back online. See,
yeah.
Persistence. Got to love that. Now, if there's a person who is like persistence personified, I think that's you. Now, One Purse, One Planet is a not-for-profit organisation, correct?
That's correct.
So why did you start an organisation like One Purse, One Planet? What drove you to do that?
The drive comes behind like a long passion of mine of wanting to be able to literally, honestly, save the world. When I was 11, I started to do the 40-hour famine, and knowing that there's children, people, mothers, fathers around the world that were starving with no shelter, no food, no water, no nothing, really kind of saddened me about what world we're actually living in and what that really, really looks like. So I held on to that vision for such a long time, and whenever we went out for dinner, you know, and nobody could finish eating their meals, you know, some people made a joke out of it, oh, let's pack this up and send it over to Ethiopia because that's what Kelly would want, or, you know, stuff like that. So when I started One Purse, One Planet, it was to create affordable, sustainable communities that can be duplicated worldwide so that people around the world could have equality, and they could have shelter, clothing, a bed to sleep in, food in their tummies, clean water, and wellness. Affordable wellness is not expensive. So, you know, it's a massive, massive, I don't know, passion of mine.
It certainly sounds like it. So we've got three businesses here, all very different and all with the same desire to stand out and be noticed, because each of you has something truly valuable to share with the world. So I'd like to go back to you, Pat. So part of what you do is helping people. And I know that you've had your own radio program. You've been New Zealand Speaker of the Year. And I imagine that this caring heart that you have comes from being a nurse for many, many years. How do you then take all of that and use it to promote your current business? Like, what are some of the things that you've been doing?
As I mentioned in the beginning, I actually was very depressed, but I chose not to be medicated. And in not being medicated, I went looking for another way to move through my grief. And as a result of that, in about a three-month period, you know, I'd done a lot of healing for myself and was just committed that this, whatever comes up for me now, I'm going to go to it. And so when I first began Joyology, I had no idea what the substance of it would be. It took me 2 or 3 years to build enough IP to have a brand. But I had this aha moment. I was having a conversation with a magician in South Australia from Auckland. And in the middle of that conversation, there was a little pause. And I just had this window of thought. And the thought was, oh, my God, we've got radiology, pathology, hematology, but no joyology. I'm going to be a joyologist. So that's when it began. And it was about 2 weeks after that I thought, if I'm going to make this work, I need to get clever. And so I ended up running two pilot programs, one for 3 months and another for 12 months. And they gave me the foundational expertise. I had the opportunity to trial a whole raft of things in those two pilots. And they helped me really cement and solidify what I wanted to bring from the past, past learnings and teachings, and build my own philosophy. And ultimately, by about 2004, I had enough to have a brand. And I think the biggest thing was people were, what's a joyologist? So there was, you know, great sparks of interest. And my story was not really about, you know, I didn't learn about joy by experiencing joy. I learned about joy through experiencing shame, grief, and embarrassment. And it was a story, I think, rife for the telling back at that time. And so there were no problems attracting media interest. And as I grew and evolved, the level of interest and the way that interest rolled out shifted. I toured with Patch Adams in 2004 through Russia's orphanages. That generated for me huge media interest. And over the years, I've done a lot of major events related to the notion of humour and its place in the well-being of people in the workplace, business and life, actually. And New Zealand's a fairly staid and conservative country, so to be daring to step up and speak outside the box really took something. In the beginning,
absolutely.
Yeah, a lot of businesses would say, you know, look, I'm sure you're a very nice lady, Pat, but we actually have fun Friday after work. This is a serious business here. But things are changing now, and people are so beginning to see and appreciate the value they can bring to the evolution of their staff and what that means for their business. When they've got that deeper engagement.
A lot of what you've done to promote yourself to this point is using your story.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, Judy, for you, you're an academic, so you're used to being in the background, writing, researching, and also as a consultant, helping other people achieve their goals. Now that you've started your own venture, what are some of the things that you've been doing to promote your business?
I might take you through some of the tactical things we're doing. So I'm just trying as many different things to get known as I possibly can. And the thing that I'm finding most successful is the old-fashioned networking. So I've committed to going to a networking function a week at a minimum, and I try and go to things that are linked to the kinds of people I'd hope to reach with this business. So, for instance, I go to things with human resources people in, small businesses, lawyers, just a mix of people who I think will be interested in coming to this space. And I meet people because I believe that that face-to-face contact is still the best way to promote a business and to build relationships with people. But I'm supporting that with a whole pile of, letterbox dropping and Facebooking and cold calling and everything I can think of. I think I'm facing two really big challenges. One is that getting a new business known takes a long time, and digging in and having the cash behind me to keep a pretty expensive business running in the time that it takes to get off the ground is more challenging than I'd realised. I've come to know that it's called the cash burn time, the time when you're spending money on creating a business, and it's a long time. And the other challenge I'm facing is that this kind of business isn't naturally newsworthy. So I'm used to promoting issues that are newsworthy, and this isn't. And so getting in the media is hard.
Okay, so finding those distinctive angles that maybe the media might be interested in is one of the challenges that you're finding. But you, all the other things that you're doing are fairly typical marketing strategies, correct?
They absolutely are, and there's no doubt that they're successful. We can see the results when we put effort in. We get results from it. And, things like two-for-one offers and all of those traditional marketing ideas work for us really, really well. And it's just about keeping at it when things seem to be tough. I guess that's the thing I'm taking away the most.
No, I'll get back to you. I just want to touch base with Kelly because you've raised a few things that I think we can all talk about. But Kelly, for you, there's not-for-profits abound on the planet. How do you encourage people to take notice of what you're doing? Is there any particular marketing strategies that have been effective for your business or your not-for-profit space?
Funny you should say that, because I really didn't feel that I needed to engage in, people that were professionals at Facebook promotions and marketing, because I just, really wanted to keep the costs down and see how I could manage to do that myself. But, it's been really hard. What we've done is we've done posters, we've done flyers, Facebook, I've been to expos, I've been in magazines, and also go to conferences to kind of promote myself and be in that space of, trying to find like-minded people to work with even, or even to get it out there. So with One Purse, One Planet, what I then decided to do was to build projects off the back end of One Purse, One Planet to be able to then do fundraising, get into the general public's eye so that we could then start to make a difference from that point of view. And then that's when we took over the custodianship of Inspired Living Events that does the film documentaries to help people make a positive change in their lives. And that's probably been the biggest one that we've actually been working on to date, in that area where we can then promote what's happening in the world, the changes that are happening, and just make people aware that this is happening, because people don't think about these sort of things. When I speak to different people about what my passion is and my vision and my mission, they go, oh, my gosh, that's so worldly. I've, never looked at it like that before. And And I think, well, how could you not? This is a world that we're all living in, and nobody thinks about it.
Well, that's really interesting. So, well, we don't think about things that do it. Is that the underlying move trying to create marketing and your promotion to engage people more in thinking about the big picture?
Can you just repeat that again, Annette? It was just breaking up and cutting out a little bit on me, and I only got every second word.
Oh, that would have sounded really interesting. So,
yeah, it did.
What you're doing through your promotion is really trying to raise awareness so that people connect with a bigger picture.
Absolutely, yes.
Absolutely. Now, Pat, for you, with your extent, like the media that you've received, you know, touring with Patch Adams, your amazing mentor. Now that you've moved to a new country and starting again, do you see that the things that you've used in the past still having the same credibility and the same power as they did back in the place where you'd established yourself?
One of the things about relocating is, of course, you are in essence starting again. So there has been that difficulty becoming known in a new country. I am Australian, but I lived in New Zealand for 17 years. So, you know, I've set myself goals, but appreciating this is going to take me some time to re-establish on that level. So being really clear on who I want to work with, what projects I want to do now, what expression of my work is the next evolution of my work, and who do I need to be meeting in order to fulfill on that. And probably a biggest part of me now, I'm getting older, is really about for me to have you know, a very high level of authentic expression, and in that be able to touch the hearts and minds of others. So that's really daring to tell the stories that, you know, with a CEO, for example, that I might necessarily have had a great deal of comfort with in the past, but really daring to do so now to make a point. For example, at one time in New Zealand when I did one of those pilots, I spent the day in bed with a 93-year-old woman and granted her every wish. And the purpose for my doing that was to demonstrate to the staff the degree to which they were so bound in their routine. And this lady, because she was a good patient, hardly got any attention as a result of that. But the things that this elderly lady, Goldie, shared with me while I was in bed with her, wouldn't have happened unless she trusted me. 93-year-old women don't let 50-year-old women into their beds. And, you know, what I say to businesses now is you've got to get into bed with your customers. You've got to find out what makes them tick. And when you generate that level of trust, you can actually do anything. So being able to share that story now with a whole new level of comfort, because I'm really sure in my purpose, enables me to really touch the hearts and minds of people. So, you know, there's some strategy and tactical things in my work, but much of it is emotive-based, because I want them to remember me long after I'm gone.
Absolutely. You've said something interesting there, Pat, that I'm going to get some comment from Judy. Judy, Pat was just talking about then, and what came out really strongly is understanding your target audience. Now, for you, your business is very localised and you've obviously got a specific target audience in mind. So for the things that you're doing, how do you know where to go and find them to conduct the marketing strategies that you're undertaking?
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? All the theory in the world, and I thought I was really good at that side of it, but it's actually quite tricky. So you say, well, I'd like to reach HR people who work from home or business coaches who work from home. But finding out where those people hang out is hard. And I am just beginning to put a lot more focus on using tools like LinkedIn to find those people. And I've been doing some cold calling, so doing research to find, say, well, we've just recently been going to pharmaceutical companies because we've discovered that our training room fits the code of practice for Medicines Australia, the training places. Doing some research about who's out there and then cold calling them, which is hard for me to do because it's a practice I don't much like. And yet it's the way that we feel we need to get out there and get to know people. Yeah, it's really hard. So where we can, we're finding email addresses first and then emailing people and letting them know we're there, and then that gives us a reason to phone and follow up. But yeah, finding out where people hang out is hard. Pat said something that really struck with me. She talked about being in a new country and becoming known and how that takes a while. And I've noticed that when you open a new business, you're trying to be known for a different reason. So in the past, I've tried to get known because I write, and now I'm trying to get known because I own a space. And it's a different market, and it's a little bit like moving countries. I'm trying to reinvent my identity, and that's an interesting process to go through as well.
Oh, absolutely. That's a really great point. And let's ask Kelly, because Kelly, you haven't always been, you know, looking after and running a not-for-profit organisation and working in the space that you are, because I know that, you know, in the past that you've worked with businesses and helping them create strategies. So how do you transition from that space into the one that you're in and get known for doing something almost completely different?
Good question. I really didn't know what that journey actually held for me, to be totally honest. When I kind of make up my mind that I want to do something, I just go, okay, I'm going to do it. And I just get in amongst it and just try and make it work for that particular idea, concept, product, whatever that looked like at that particular point in time. I do have a lot of support from people that I am in business with, so that made it really easy, but the majority of that has been probably word of mouth at this particular point in time.
Okay. So, and it's really just repeating over and over and over again exactly what it is that you're doing.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, Pat, I want to, you know, like your bio reads, like it's almost heartbreaking in places where you talk about the pain and the trauma that you've suffered in your life. How do you, you know, and you're saying before how you, you know, you choose to leave that behind and move forward. So when you start a new business, how do you wrap all of that pain and trauma and happiness and joy up to start again?
For me, it was a lengthy process. Like, it wasn't all over in that first 3 months, really. But when I decided I need to get clever, and that's when I thought I'd do two pilots. Or I actually taught one in the beginning, and then the second became obvious. And I worked part-time alongside developing the business. I needed to do that to accommodate my own needs. And it was actually perfect and very much led intuitively, which is, I've just made myself a note to, you know, emphasise this. I was guided a lot, was doubtful also alongside having these thoughts about what to do. But, you know, doing those two pilots, investing that 15 months all up, was very instrumental in getting the foundational work. So we've got to be committed. And, you know, commitment means no matter what. I built with a group of artists over in New Zealand. We raised $550,000 bought an old KFC building off local council for $1 and refurbished it into an art gallery, which has been self-sustaining for about the last 7 years. And the way in which we did that was we committed to be our word no matter what. Whatever came up, we were not getting off the page until this was done. And I really saw that level of commitment is where you begin to, and showing up is where you start to meet. You know, preparation is what you need in order to meet opportunity and then, you know, be open to what comes from that opportunity. So
yes,
those things really helped in those first couple of years. I knew I was being guided, knew I was being supported. The answers weren't all obvious. And alongside that, the media attention was also, it was like, oh my goodness, people are loving this. A geologist, and she's got the saddest story, but, you know, every, you know, newspapers, magazines, there was no problem getting coverage. It was quite extraordinary. Years passed and I needed to apply more intelligence to some of that media, but those first 2 or 3 years, it was very easy. So, you know, I think that human interest thing and the story of overcoming and the, you know, to I've shared of the worst moments, but also being able to show people, even though all those things were happening, I found joy. That first pilot program was in an aged care facility, and I was still grieving for all that had happened, including partner that I loved leaving. And I'd arrive in that rest home, and 29 residents' eyes lit up when I walked in, and it's like, oh my goodness. you know, family hadn't talked for 25 years and left with nothing and starting again, and I would walk in and here was love. So as those things evolved for me, so I shared it. And I began to see the paradox and the synchronicity, and I shared those stories too because my path forward was built on that.
Mm. So it's really about embracing your personal story even to promote yourself. And how about we move into that, because a lot of what stops people from promoting themselves or promoting their business is that fear of, you know, perhaps standing out too much or exposing themselves and feeling vulnerable. So, Kelly, I want to talk to you about this because we had an interaction a couple of weeks ago. You donated a prize for a lunch I was holding and you said to me, I don't have to stand up and speak, do I? And I've looked at you because to me you're an amazing, passionate, courageous and, you know, knowledgeable, inspirational person. And I thought, why would you not want to draw more attention to what you're doing through your words? So I want to start with you and to put you on the spot is when you're thinking about, oh, my God, I've got to stand up and I've got to say something, what is it that's stopping you?
I suppose it stems back to my childhood where I was always told that I would amount to absolutely nothing and that anything I said, you know, never made sense or, you know, you can't speak properly because I, you know, sometimes used to have a little stutter or I couldn't read properly, so if I ever stood out in front of a group of people or had to read an assignment out in front of the class, it would be very slow and time-consuming. And, yeah, I just was never given the confidence as a child. And growing up, you know, into my youth, I avoided it like the plague. And now that I and have stepped out of that comfort zone through some self-healing processes that I engaged into, you know, probably about 6 years ago, I'm being more courageous in wanting to be able to be heard, and my voice does matter, and that, you know, I can make positive changes in people's lives, and I've seen it, but sometimes I just get that choked up feeling, vibration in my throat, where I just go, oh, what if I say the wrong thing? What if somebody thinks I'm stupid? What if? So that's where that probably stems from. That's where I feel that, you know, I would probably, if I was to do any more public speaking, that I'd need to probably concentrate more in that area.
Oh, that's interesting. Thank you for sharing that. Now, Judy, we touched on a little bit before because, you know, as an academic, you're used to being in the background. For you, this journey of, you know, building a new business and looking at a whole new target audience, what are some of the things that you've had to kind of like take a deep breath and say, all right, I'm going to go out there and give this a go?
Well, this is when I confess that for me it's not hopping up in front of people, because I love doing that. When you got up in front of 500 students several times a week and given lectures, and I grew up in an environment, my father was a minister, and so I was used to hopping up in front of people and talking. And so, oddly enough, my paradox is that I love getting up in front of people, but I only like it when I've had time to prepare and I'm talking about a topic that I know something about. And if I'm in a one-on-one situation trying to promote myself, I feel much less comfortable. So the biggest thing for me, where I've had to take a deep breath and say, yep, I can do this, actually I can think of two. The first one is that networking thing. I find it really hard to walk up to people and do the whole, hello, I'm Judy and this is my business, and it's that initial chat business. Don't like that, and I'm really having to practice it. And the other thing that I find really difficult is sending out publicity material and then following it up by phone, whether that be to news media or to small businesses that I've sent a letterbox drop to or whatever. I just hate ringing people up and interrupting them and saying, here I am, this is what I'm about, are you interested? I hate direct selling.
All right. I find that interesting because, and I'm going to bring Pat in on this because I know that she's got a program around shamelessly self-promoting. And I always find it interesting when you're talking about people who are promoting their businesses or promoting themselves in order to attract more clients, that reticence to upset somebody or interrupt their day, particularly journalists, because that's part of their job, is to be interrupted and have people present, hey, look, this is this great story. So, Pat, in your creation of this, you know, the program that you have about shamelessly self-promoting, what are some of the key points that's come up for you, that you can help people overcome that discomfort?
I think, awesome question. don't know if I can answer it in one thing, but, I think I remember in the first couple of years in New Zealand when I started Joyology, a HR person in a company took me inside and said, look, you know, I've got there's something I'd like to say. She said, Pat, if you want to get on in this country, you're really going to have to tone yourself down. So in the beginning, I received that as a bit of a backhander, really. But when I gave it some thought, it was like, no. I have come through too much. I have committed too much. My entire life has been devoted to this path, and now I'm seeing some expression. So there was a level of determination and a level of commitment to create some new boundaries for myself, and becoming disciplining myself to become more self-assured. Then some of the processes that I use with clients is, being really clear where you want to go. I have worked since, for about the last 20 years, using a backward plan. About 20 years ago, I won the New South Wales Tourism Award for Media, and the very first thing I did was write the speech I would give on the awards night, and then I did a backward plan for what would happen in my business, which was video production then, and how I would be, and it's probably the best year that I had ever had in terms of discipline and focus and making things happen.
That's a really interesting concept, Pat. Can I just interrupt you there?
Yes.
A backward plan. So that's all like visualizing this is the end result to what I want to achieve, and then working
yes.
back from that to put
yes.
into place the things that you need to do to achieve that.
Yeah, it's been.
That's gold.
I did win, and I did give that speech. And the things that helped me stay on the page were I committed I'm going to do at least one thing a day to get me towards this. I'm going to use my circle of influence to gather all of those people. And I use the term co-optition, not competition, it's co-optition. Who do I know who will work with me and support with me, collaborate and invest in me in this process? And my bank manager actually ended up being probably a key person. And then how do you stay on the page? Life happens and, events happen. And so it was finding a question that I could ask myself. And the question for me at that point was, how does this individual politician, how does this coverage of a bank robbery because I freelanced for the news. How does, all the different work that I'm doing at this moment, how does that link to tourism? Because it was a tourism media award. And having that question to keep me on the page every day kept me in the point of focus more than perhaps I'd ever been before. I'd always been pretty focused, but this was serious. I had a five-year plan for that company to go full broadcast and achieved it in 2.5. And I think this, being able to know exactly where I wanted to go and exactly what the business was going to look like, then enable, my intuition to work well, the creativity to work well, and the process. There's just a real tightness there.
Okay, so Pat, I hope that I can share that backward plan idea with a lot more people, because that just sounds absolutely incredible, fantastic way to focus your marketing or whatever it is you're trying to achieve in your business. Now, Kelly, back to you. So this tightness that you get in your throat, knowing that that's, can be an issue for you, what ways have you found around that? Because, we've all got things that are uncomfortable for us to do when it comes marketing our business. So what other things do you use that you can skirt around that?
I have some really beautiful people around me that have offered to do it on my behalf as a testimonial or we just get creative with it, or we'll do a shout out on Facebook or something. But I'm really not wanting to be able to hide behind that, because I'm getting stronger in where I want to be and what that looks like for myself and for my children and my family, to be able to give them the best that I can offer them. I need to be able to do the best that I possibly can and be that example. So now I need to really pull my finger out and step it up a notch and, find some people that can help me overcome that sensation, so that, when you are presenting or you are a visitor and you are in front of 100 people or 500 people or, you know, however many people, you can freely speak your passion and your vision and your mission, and people feel it, but they don't feel that shakiness and that kind of, oh, you know, she feels embarrassed or whatever other people think. Well, maybe people don't think that, and I just maybe think that they think it. So I don't know.
It's hard to know sometimes, isn't it? What's real and what's not real. Judy, for you, you know, this standing out and stepping up for a new business, when you started, did you conceive at the time that it was going to be as challenging or as much work as what you've found over the last 12 months?
I think if I'd known how hard this was going to be, I might not have done it. I think that nothing prepares you for how complex something new can be, particularly when it's big. And there's a lot of invisible work that gets done in any project. And even though I thought that I had it quite well planned out, just the shock of how big the project was and how much I had to learn took my breath away. And the other thing that surprised me is how long it's taken to get well known. In the past, when I've been working on promotional stuff, it's been around single issues. So I've run campaigns that are designed to lobby government and things like that. And I have been promoting things that have a short life that you want to get lots of coverage about very quickly. And this is much more of a slow burn thing, and being prepared to sit in and just keep at it, which has taken my breath away as well. We've had some really good media coverage. We were in, we had a double page spread in the Sunday paper last year, and that was a fantastic thing. And we've been on TV too, and that was brilliant. But none of those things is a miracle. It's about keeping at it and saying, okay, we had a great success last month with this great publicity. Now, what are we going to do to build on that and make sure that the next lot of people know that we're here?
And you said before, particularly for the type of business that you have, it's a physical place that people go to, not always considered the sexiest media topics. How have you gone about pulling out and finding angles for stories for the media? You've been in the paper, you've been on TV. What were the type of things that you focused on?
Yeah, so the two big bits of coverage we've had have been around people trying to open a place, people being me and my partner, trying to open a place where we're bringing our backgrounds into a venue that's a bit quirky. So the cafe has got a words and writing theme, and so we've had coverage around that. So the quirkiness of it helps. The other thing that I try to do is get coverage for events that we're running here. So we run art classes here, for instance, and we'll try and get those classes mentioned in places that might be interested in promoting us. From the perspective of media coverage, the biggest challenge is that a venue is not newsworthy, and it's not the news media's job to promote my events. The events only become newsworthy after they've happened, if something interesting happened at them. And so finding the news angle is a real challenge for that standard news media coverage.
Okay, thinking outside the box.
That was
now
a question?
Pat, oh, no, it was more of a statement, that thinking outside of the box, because that's what you've been doing. And what the interesting thing I found about what you said then was that the media is not there to promote your business. They're not there to promote your event. They're not there to promote your idea. It's really up to us to have that diversity of PR tools and tactics that, you know, if we can get media, then we get it. But if we're relying on one thing to promote our business, it's going to be a very hard slog. What do you think about that, Pat?
Yes, you know, it's got to be something that will appeal to whoever the listening or reading audience is, And, you know, so many people are striving to do better. They're striving to evolve their consciousness, operate in a higher fashion, develop new skills. And I wanted to just mention, back on Kelly's comments about speaking, a very huge gift to me was studying improv acting. We can't all live a life in the performing arts, but we can live a life enhanced by them. And for me, improv acting helped remove the filter that is my censor and enabled more and more full self-expression. I didn't really ever want to be an actor like Whose Line Is It Anyway and use improv in that fashion, but I wanted to use it in my professional speaking so on stage I could be freer and more adaptable, and also in my one-on-one encounters to get rid of that filter. And so that's what improv does. It's probably, you know, most people wouldn't do it for that reason, but that's its purpose. The reason they can be so skilled on stage when there's no script is because they're really comfortable with allowing first thought. First thought is correct. First thought is correct. Ah. All players are equal. And in that place, you can create a really high trust environment. So if you were interested and had the opportunity, doing some improv acting for that purpose might be very useful.
Oh, that's a really great tip.
Thank you.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
There you go. So, Pat, do you run these improv sessions and where do we sign up?
I have run them back in New Zealand. I haven't run them this year. I've just been talking last week, actually, to a venue that would be perfect to be running those. So, yes, they'll be in Auckland. Brisbane, over the coming months. So, yeah, I'd love to share those with you once I have something firmed up. Mm.
Please do. And I think judging...
Jump in and say, I've got the perfect venue too.
Yes, I need to come look.
There you go. How's that? Between the four of us, we'll take over the world. What is really apparent from our conversation here today is the biggest stumbling block for any type of promotion, regardless of what tool or tactic you're using, is it all begins and ends in between your ears. So it's what goes on in your head and how you think of yourself. Kelly, do you think that stands true for you?
Absolutely, Annette. You know, you can only kind of have the knowledge from where you've been and then gain more confidence in the people that you attract into your life to then enhance where you're actually going. So, absolutely.
What about you, Judy?
Yeah, absolutely does fit inside you and your stories and your background. And I think the biggest benefit that people can make for themselves is knowing what they're about and knowing what their elevator pitch is. So I find that I've got a lot going on in my head and I feel like I've got a lot on offer, and trying to figure out for every different audience what's the elevator pitch, the 30-second or whatever it is, so I try to make it one sentence, what's that and how do I get that in there first in a way that captures their attention and makes them want to keep listening to me. That's where I put a lot of my thought.
And what about you, Pat? So your success, your trials, your tribulations, the things that stopped you, you've offered us some really great tips there. But has it started and ended with what goes on in your head?
No, probably. I can't remember the whole poem, but the Dalai Lama said, if you wish to know peace, then provide peace for another. If you wish to know joy, then provide joy for another. And so I operate very much from that space in all that I do. So one of my main signature things is I give people a piece of glad mail. Even in a keynote presentation, I'll give out three pieces of glad mail. This is personalised mail, honouring, celebrating, congratulating. Over the years, I've delivered over 10,000 pieces of personal mail. I believe that that outreach is responsible for 5,000 testimonials. And so, you know, happy being a mirror of who you really are and what you stand for.
Not frankly large. Okay.
We can reverse it on hotels and go to Harvard.
Oh, we had someone else in there. Sorry about that, people. Now, we're almost finished the program for today, and I'd really like to leave our listeners with some key thoughts about the strategies that are working for you and how you know that they've been working for you. So I'm going to start with you, Judy.
The way I know that things work is when I go to something and I say, oh, I've got this new venue called Northside Meetings and the Letter Lounge, and somebody says, oh, I've heard of that. I've been meaning to get there. And that's just the best feeling, to know that there is word spreading. The other way that I know I'm being successful is that I think that publicity is great, but it's got to have something to do. I am confident that the product we're offering is good and has depth to it, and I can see that coming through in things like repeat business and good reviews and so on, then I think that's really important too. And in my mind, getting to that depth is more important than being plastered on every single billboard in the state. You know, it's about doing what we do well and being known for doing it well.
What about you, Pat?
I think I would come back to my first statement, create a long-term backward plan, begin with the end in mind, and, you know, be prepared and be adept and adapt along the way. So really being observant of what's happening in the external world and linking and flowing with that. And I think dare to be different. I secured, post the Christchurch earthquakes, I secured 9 keynotes, and they all said to me when I'd offered to come down, I called the presentation Excavating Joy, and, you know, I'm sure it was, you know, finding metaphors and puns, different ways of expressing what it is that you're looking to deliver, can just add another level of interest for the person that you're receiving it.
And a wrap up, Kelly, what about you?
I found that being in the film documentary business and doing the film nights, that the people that are attending, I'm getting more publicity and word of mouth from them sharing how they've experienced being at the film night for the screenings and how comfortable that's made them feel, and following up with support for people that have asked for it and stepped out of that space is probably the best publicity that I can say at this particular point in time that's actually working for me, over and above everything else. But, you know, we use Facebook a lot, so people will see different posts that maybe not resonate with them. But I would say word of mouth.
Word of mouth. Well, ladies, yeah. I want to thank you so much for joining me this morning for the Publicity Genie Show here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm going to share with all of our listeners the links to each of your sites, so they can go and check you out, see if they'd like to work with you, see where they can connect with you. So thank you very much for your time. Go off and have an amazing day. Tune in a fortnight to the Publicity Genie Show, which will be episode 6. Watch out for that guest speaker. They're amazing. But again, everyone, thank you so much for your time and have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you, Annette.
Thanks, Annette.
I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.